The following podcast is a production of St. James Episcopal Church in Skaneateles, Atlas, New York, and features thoughts and musical reflections based on the lectionary for this week. It is available on our website, iTunes, and Apple Podcasts. All music is licensed to St. James for streaming by One License and Christian Copyright Licensing International. For more information, visit stjamesskan.org.
May the words of my mouth and the meditations of our hearts be acceptable in your sight, our God and Redeemer. As you might imagine, this was not an easy reflection to write, so I want to give credit to several authors whose words found their way into this reflection. They include Mary Van Valen, Andrew Harmon, Mary Louise Bringle, James E. Lampkin, and N.T. Wright. On Good Friday, the darkness wins, or so it seems. In our liturgical year, this is the winter solstice. The liturgical year began at the beginning of Advent with one candle. Every week, one more candle was added, until at Christmas we had five. Jesus is born, the light of the world. In Epiphany, the Star of Bethlehem, and some years, Candlemas, with hundreds of candles. And then Ash Wednesday, and we are reminded of our mortality. We are dust, and to dust we shall return. On Sundays in Lent, there are but two candles on the altar, the only ones in the church. And then for a brief shining moment, we have the service of Tenebrae. But within an hour, all 14 lights are extinguished. And last night, on Monday, Thursday, the last two candles were snuffed out, all is dark. Today is a day that weighs heavily on the church. We hear the passion narrative every year, and every year all those feelings flow back. Anguish and disbelief, even fear, as we contemplate Jesus' death. Every year on our own journey is different also. Certainly this year is very different. Piled on the emotions of reliving Christ's death, we have our own isolation, sickness, and even the death of loved ones. There is good news, though, if we can listen. The cross is a most unusual symbol with which to mark our faith in the church, but it is powerful. In the Roman Catholic Cathedral in San Salvador, the capital of El Salvador, there is a large side chapel. The consecrated elements are there in a tabernacle or an ombre. There are always several dozen of the faithful praying there, some for a few minutes and some for much longer. On the back wall that separates that chapel from the nave, there is a large, wooden, unusual cross. It's carved from wood, and it looks more like a gnarled tree than the crosses we have with their sharp right angles. One time I was in the cathedral, and there was a woman with her feet on the ground, but hanging on the cross, literally hanging. Her eyes were closed. I could not tell if she was crying. A photo would have been inappropriate. If I could but draw, I would sketch that scene, because it is still fresh in my mind after many years. I do not know why she was grasping that symbol of Christ's death so tightly. I do not know what she'd suffered in her life, and certainly she'd suffer many difficulties, for the poor in El Salvador suffer greatly. I do know that that symbol of Christ's sacrifice gave her strength and comfort. The symbol of Jesus' suffering and death gave the woman strength. How odd that is. The cross was an instrument of government-sanctioned torture. Of course, capital punishment of enemies of the government's over the years is not unknown. It's rather common. Many innocent people have been killed by governments over the years, even today. In almost all those cases, the executions were quick. A firing squad, a guillotine, etc. Crucifixion was much different, and it was common in those days in that part of the world under the Romans. The Judean historian Josephus and other historians report that there were many crosses standing ready for the Roman-controlled, in the Roman-controlled area of Palestine. When Roman general Vespasian and his son Titus crushed the Jewish revolt in the year 70, it is reported that they ran out of wood for crosses and had to import it from afar. Executions are never pretty. Crucifixion is particularly brutal. Roman orator Cicero called it, quote, the most cruel and terrifying penalty. The historian Josephus called it, quote, the most pitiable of deaths. And Origen, a father of the church in the third century, referred to it as, quote, most shameful form of death, namely the cross. Not to belabor the point, but to make it clear, the death that Jesus chose was most gruesome. These descriptions are not hyperbole. The convicted criminal would hang on the cross for perhaps days until they died from suffocation. And unless one had a brave friend to retrieve the body would hang there for weeks, perhaps, according to Josephus, who had personally retrieved three friends. One of whom lived. Jesus was born because of love, and Jesus walked among us because of love, and Jesus died because of love. Why, oh why, would Jesus choose that terrible form of death? Perhaps you get the passion narratives all mixed up in your head. I certainly do. The passion according to John, which we just heard, presents a different picture from the other three Gospels. In John, Jesus was in control. He said to Pilate, quote, "You would have no power over me unless it had been given you from above." And Jesus carried the cross himself, never falling. At the end, Jesus said, "It is finished." His mission was finished. Jesus came among us for love, and particularly Jesus attended to those and ministered to those who were at the margins. Those at the margins in the first century in Palestine, women, children, the sick, the mentally ill, tax collectors, prostitutes, and so on. Jesus was executed because he was a threat to those in power. Those in power in government, including Pontius Pilate, and those in power in the religious community, including Annas and Caiaphas. Jesus could have had a long and pleasant life in Galilee, preaching, teaching, and healing. But he set his face towards Jerusalem. He set his face towards Golgotha. Archbishop Oscar Romero of El Salvador could have had a pleasant life too, enjoying the opulent life of an archbishop and preaching safe sermons. But he gave priority to the poor and to the oppressed. He preached the gospel. He preached, quote, "When the church hears the cry of the oppressed, it cannot but denounce the social structures that give rise to and perpetuate the misery from which the cry arises," end quote. Forces aligned by the government martyred him 41 years ago last week. Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. could have had a long, pleasant life as senior pastor of a huge Baptist church in Atlanta. But he gave priority to the oppressed and to the poor. He was assassinated by the forces that opposed him 53 years ago, this coming Easter day. Jesus was born, walked among us, and was crucified because of God's love. Jesus died because a sinful world could not deal with his call to radical love. He stood with the poor, the marginalized, and the oppressed. His life and teaching were threatening to those in power. And so the broken world executed the one who was himself love. The crucifixion says that accepting the invitation to follow Jesus' example of love does have consequences. We, however, know the next chapter, the good news. In Spanish, it's three verbs in the simple past tense and one verb in the simple future tense. Nació, murió, resucitó, volverá. He was born, he died, he was raised. He will come again. Amen.
wherever you are on your journey of faith, all are welcome here. For more information about this or any program offered by St. James, visit stjamesskan.org.